Inigo's Eighth Dream. Ediard awoke to the marvel of soft fingers caressing his abdomen. It was a lovely sensation, matched to the warmth of the supple mattress, the touch of fresh cotton sheets, the fading blossom scent of Jessile's perfume. He smiled, his eyes still closed, as he sighed a delighted welcome to the new day. A kiss fell on his cheek. Her nose nuzzled his ear. His smile widened, and the possessive hand slipped along his skin, past his belly button, and further yet. Jessile giggled. "Now that's what I call rising to greet the dawn," she murmured lecherously. The other girl giggled as well. Ediard's eyes snapped open. Memories came flooding back. Just to confirm them, Christiana was lying on his other side, watching him and Jessile with covetous intent. Her flimsy white negligee far too small to contain her full figure, even if the lace bows down the front had been fastened. He recalled how enjoyable it had been undoing those bows last night. A weak "ha" was all Ediard could manage. "Me first," Jessile insisted, her sharp teeth emphasizing the claim on his earlobe. Christiana produced a reproving pout. "Don't forget me, water walker." Ediard couldn't answer. Jessile's kiss had now engulfed his mouth. He folded his arms around her as she slithered on top of him. The memories of last night gained texture, and he remembered her delight and exactly how to cause it. His hands moved in the way which made her shudder helplessly. Then he applied his third hand, just so. For the last 3 weeks, as Autumn embraced Macathran, Ediard had learned how to harness his telekinetic ability in the bedroom to the best possible advantage. Another arena of life in which poor old Ashwell lagged far behind the sophisticated decadence of the city. But he hadn't lacked for girls eager to teach him the most intimate secrets of this darkest art. His fame and strength had proved irresistible to the beautiful, mischievous daughters of the nobility. They relished demonstrating their ill-gotten skill, almost as much as he enjoyed being the beneficiary. He never was sure exactly who was corrupting who.
"I've never seen steps into a bathing pool before," Christiana remarked as she walked down into the bubble-coated water. "We have those awful wooden ladder things hanging on the side in all the pools in great-grandfather's mansion."
Her hand stroked Ediard's face as she sat on the seat shelf beside him.
"This is much better.
There are quite a few pools in the constable's tenement that have steps like these," Ediard assured her, confident she wouldn't be going in any to find out.
"Not fair you've got them and we haven't," Jessile complained.
She pouted. Jessile had a very pretty pout, Ediard decided. It certainly got her just about everything she wanted. He relaxed between them, which spoke volumes about how his life had changed since that day in Birmingham Pool. On several evenings, there had been fights in the theatres over who got to bed him, such reputable girls, too. He'd never really considered what kind of life popularity would bring, and he had enough of his dour Ashwell upbringing left to convince himself it wouldn't last. But in the meantime, at his instruction, a G-chimp brought 2 sponges and a bottle of soap oil to the rim of the pool.
"Would you do my back?" he asked, and leaned forward.
Both girls took a sponge. Even with shielded thoughts, they clearly didn't have cleanliness in mind as they began to apply the liquid with languid movements.
"What are you doing tonight?" Jessile asked.
"Celebrating, I hope," Ediard told her. It was the last day of Armanel's trial. His verdict was a formality. At least, Ediard sincerely hoped so. But then he'd thought that last time. That good old Ashwell optimism again. The trial was the biggest event in Macathran, and had been for the last 4 days, as the opposing lawyers presented their respective cases. Only the grandest of the city's aristocracy managed to get into the public gallery. Everyone else relied on sight and sound gifting from the official court recorder.
"How about you?" "My fiancée will be back from patrol this afternoon," she told him. "Eustace is a lieutenant in the militia, guarding our borders," she added, with a large dollop of irony.
"Ah," Ediard said. He glanced at her left hand, seeing a slim silver band like twined vines. A single diamond was set in its crest. She bent round to look at his expression.
That doesn't bother you, does it? You're the water walker.
No, not worried. He did wonder what kind of marriage it would be, a thought which must have shone through his shielding.
I'm a third daughter, Jessal said with a kindly smile. We're marrying because, after 23 years, I'll finally get out of the family mansion, and he gets a dowry to live off. Poor boy's a fifth son of the family Norrit's second son, which entitles him to a big slice of nothing. Daddy's promised me an estate in Walton Province. They say it has a nice big house.
That's why you're marrying.
Of course.
She paused the sponge on the top of his spine.
I know I'm going to miss Macathran, but I suppose I'll get used to country life. I'll visit the city every season.
What about love? He asked. Both girls smiled delightedly, letting wistful admiration flow free from behind their own veiled thoughts.
You're so sweet, Jessal said. That's one of the things about you. I can sense it so easily. We all can. You're just endlessly fascinating. Is it true the first time the Pythia met you, she said you'd be mayor?
What?
No. She said no such thing.
He struggled to remember what she had said.
I'd like you to meet my friend Ranelagh, Christiana said. She's a Gilmorn. They're a merchant family, horribly rich. She's a second daughter, very marriageable, and she's expressed in complete confidence to me how strongly she'd enjoy knowing you.
Right.
Christiana stood up in front of him, wiping long damp hair from her shoulders with deliberate slow movements.
She's pretty too, and young, in case you were wondering. If I introduce you, we could all celebrate together tonight.
Ediard found himself short of breath. Boyd was waiting outside Ediard's maisonette, wearing a long fur-lined coat over his smartest uniform. A slushy rain was dribbling out of an overcast sky, damping his hair. He started to say something, then stopped abruptly as Christiana and Jessal emerged just behind Ediard. The girls were swathed in long woolen wraps, as were currently fashionable. They just about covered up their expensive theatre dresses.
"Ladies," Ediard said courteously.
They both smiled demurely and allowed him to kiss them on the cheek.
"Don't forget," Christiana said, "tonight, me and Ranelagh."
Boyd watched in awe as the girls hurried along the walkway to the stairs. They were giggling after a few paces, arms linked, their heads leaning in together to not quite whisper.
"The Alrado Theatre in Zelda District,"
Christiana's long talk shot at him. "I'll be there." Ediard smiled happily at their departing backs.
"Two,"
Boyd exclaimed once the girls were clattering down the stairs. Ediard knew his smile was now boastful. Didn't care.
"Lady, how do you do it?
Step aside, Maxon. The new king is on his throne."
"How was Saria?"
Ediard countered. "Wasn't last night your fifth?"
"Ninth, actually."
Boyd's grin turned sinful. "She's a matron, you know, sixth daughter of their next district master."
"Good for you,"
Ediard said. He still didn't really know his way around Macathran's aristocracy, though he'd certainly met an awful lot of the younger members recently.
"She let slip she'd be acceptable to a proposal. Can you imagine that? Me, the son of a baker, marrying into the matrons."
"Is it so unusual?" Boyd slapped Ediard's back. "How you, country boy?" Ediard wondered what his friend would have to say on the subject of a second daughter in the Gilmorn family. Right from the beginning, he'd thought the city's obsession with lineage and money to be unhealthy, as if such considerations were paramount. Of course, it might just be that Ranelagh was a lovely person as well. Only one way to find out. They made their way across the low bridge over the Outer Circle Canal and into the Majate district. Arminel's trial was being conducted in the central chamber of the Courts of Justice, the largest there was. Outside, the walls of the big ante-hall were punctured by a series of deep arrière-voussure arches, leading to the offices of the judiciary and their clerks. A lot of people in fine robes were already gathered there, waiting when Ediard and Boyd arrived. Ediard respectfully acknowledged the looks cast in his direction as they made their way over to the cluster of constables around Captain Ronark.
He recognized several members of the Upper Council. Imelan, the Chemistry Guild's Grand Master. Dalkeen, the District Master of Fieka. Julin, District Master of Haxpen. And Finitan, of course, who at least seemed genuinely welcoming with the sly grin he shot at Ediard.
About time, Cancine said as they joined the constables. We're about to go in.
There was the faintest hint of suspicion leaking through her guarded mind. Ediard reckoned that was deliberate. She usually had a very strong shield. She never voiced any dismay at the success he was having with girls right now, but he knew it bothered her. In any case, he knew she'd had numerous invitations from various grand family sons, though that would more likely be a cause of annoyance for her.
They wouldn't start without him, Maxon teased.
I've given my testimony, Ediard said with a straight face. I don't really need to be here. She pulled a face at him.
And yet your ego delivered you here in time, Maxon said, equally innocently. How fortunate we all are.
Any word on Dinley? Ediard asked, ignoring Maxon's taunt. He was slightly disappointed their squadmate wasn't at the courts of justice. When they'd all visited Dinley last, just a couple of days ago, the doctors had said he was almost ready to leave the hospital. It would be light duties only for another month or so, but the bullet wound was healing well.
Bit much to expect him to be here as soon as he's out, Captain Ronark said. He'll probably start tomorrow.
Yes, sir, Maxon said.
Here we go, Sergeant Che said.
Master Solorin from the Guild of Lawyers emerged from the nearest archway, assisted as always by a couple of G-monkeys. After the debacle of Arminel's previous trial, Ediard had asked Captain Ronark if the district station could retain their old legal tutor as prosecuting counsel this time. To his surprise, the captain had agreed. But then, as everyone in the whole city knew, this time Arminel and his cohorts were going to be found very, very guilty. It was just that Ediard felt more comfortable with Solorin prosecuting. At least the ancient lawyer knew how to present a case, and wouldn't succumb to any procedural tricks employed by the defense.
All waiting for me, Master Solorin said cheerfully. How very flattering. Come along, then. Let us do battle one last time.
The clerk of the court appeared at the big doors leading to the central chamber. The case of Macathran versus Arminel, Gustape, Falor, Harry, and Omasis is called to session, he announced loudly. Master Solorin made his painfully slow way to the central chamber, with everyone else falling into place behind him as tradition dictated. Once again, Master Cherix had been retained as Arminel's defense counsel. He followed the constables in, accompanied by two junior lawyers, seemingly unperturbed by the stature of the case.
Wish I could afford him, Boyd whispered to Ediard and Cancine as they made their way to their seats. In fact, if I ever do get arrested, I'm going to ask for him.
When you get arrested, you mean? Cancine smiled back.
Ediard grinned, but Boyd was right. Even with an open and shut case, Cherix had been flawless in his presentation, citing Ediard's provocation, the grudge between Arminel and Ediard, inflamed tension, the panic on the day, doing his best to mitigate the ultimate sentence.
They had to have someone that good, Che said as the squad settled in their benches. It's politics. The trial must be seen as fair.
When the central chamber was filled to capacity, the clerk called for silence and the three judges walked in. The day before the trial began, Solorin had told them that Owen, the mayor himself, would take the role of chief judge of the proceedings. It was a very rare event for the mayor to sit in court, even though his office was head of the judiciary. Ediard somehow hadn't been surprised. Politics, again. The city wanted to see the gang members punished, and there was an election in the spring. The nature of the case gave Owen the perfect justification to step in. Owen and his two fellow judges called the court to order and requested the closing statements from both counsels. Ediard listened with a growing sense of excitement, maybe even a sense of suspense. It was a foregone conclusion. Solorin's relentless speech made that perfectly clear, expertly demolishing the mitigating circumstances Cherix had so carefully built up. But even so, Cherix almost made Ediard feel sorry for Arminel. A life led astray through no fault of his own. Dreadful childhood. Abandoned by parents. Fallen into crime because the city didn't care. Surely they won't fall for this. As he looked at the faces of the judges, they were totally impassive, their minds perfectly shielded. After the submissions, Owen announced a recess so the judges could consider their verdict. Ediard and the others found themselves back out in the ante-hall again, trying not to let their feelings leak to everyone else. Grandmaster Finnerton came over to talk to them. "Any doubts about the outcome?" he asked quietly. "You seem subdued." "No, sir," Ediard said. "But Cherix is good." "He has to be. The Grand Council can't afford any accusation of bias." "Politics. You are becoming a proper citizen of Macathran, aren't you?"
"I do my best, sir."
"I know." Finnerton drew him away from the other constables. "Then consider this. The offer you will be made after the case is over is not about ability. It is made to test you."
"Sir?"
"If you accept, it will show you understand the city's politics and indicate you play by the same rules as the rest of us. If you refuse, if you claim you're not worthy, or wish to demonstrate your humility before the lady, or something along those lines, then you're telling everyone you're a dangerous idealist."
"Yes, sir,"
Ediard said blankly. He didn't have a clue what the Grand Master was talking about. "You have my blessing either way, but it has to be your own choice. I would simply ask you to consider what you can accomplish on the outside looking in. Think about it."
"I will, sir."
Finnerton patted Ediard on the shoulder and went back to the group of masters from the Grand Council.
"What was that about?" Maxon asked. "I haven't got the faintest idea."
The three judges took 2 hours to deliberate. When the court was recalled, Arminel and his four fellow accused were made to stand as Owen read the findings. On extortion, all five accused were found guilty. On conspiracy, guilty. On the attempted murder of two constables, a charge leveled at Arminel alone, he was found guilty. Arminel kept his face and mind composed the whole time. Ediard was expecting the man to at least glance in his direction, but his resolve never wavered. Owen then put a square of scarlet dross silk on his head. Ediard finally saw Arminel tense up. Gustape, Falor, Harry, and Omasis were sentenced to 20 years in the Trampello mine. They were led away to the holding cells. Arminel stood alone, facing the three judges. "The crimes you have been found guilty of are exceptional," Owen declared. "I don't believe that I have ever encountered such deliberate wickedness in my time on the Grand Council. To compound this, you have constantly refused to cooperate with the constables and tell them the names of other members in your vile criminal organization. While this might earn you their gratitude, it does nothing to encourage leniency on my part. We have never had the death penalty on Querentia. For this you can thank the lady, who in her wisdom believes that there is no human soul which cannot be redeemed. However, I see no sign that your salvation is possible. As a consequence, I find myself with no alternative but to sentence you to incarceration in the Trampello mines for the remainder of your life. May the lady bless your soul upon its ascent into the radiant heavens, for no one else will." He banged the gavel. "This court is concluded." The spectators filed out of the central chamber while Ediard and his squadmates sat on their benches in a mild daze.
"Wow,"
Maxon said.
"Life," Boyd said.
"That's just about unheard of," Cancine said.
Master Solorin turned to face the constables. "I believe the last case where a life sentence was issued was 42 years ago. The Golden Park Ripper, a most unpleasant individual. Before your time, of course. For that you may consider yourselves lucky."
"Wow,"
Maxon said again.
"Congratulations, young man," Master Solorin said, and put his hand out. Ediard took the old man's grip gently.
"Thank you, sir. You got the verdict for us."
"I didn't have much work to do, thanks to your extraordinary gift.
I wish you luck in your future endeavors. It has been a privilege to be your legal instructor. But, to use an ancient phrase, I think you have outgrown me now.
Oh, no, sir. I'm hoping for a lot more cases.
And you'll get them, of that I'm in no doubt. And I'm not the only one, it would seem. Do you see that gentleman over there?
His gnarled finger pointed with only a slight tremor. Ediard and the others glanced in the direction the old lawyer indicated. They saw a man in a flamboyant blue jacket and grey dross silk shirt making his way along the main aisle. He was probably approaching the end of his first century, yet still hale and healthy, with thick brown hair hanging over his collar, only a few strands of which were turning to silver. He had heavy gold rings on every finger, and loops of gold chain round his neck. His face was fattening, the result of many years of good living. Even so, he looked physically powerful. He was watching them with pale green eyes that were overshadowed by a broad forehead. Some accident or fight long ago had left him with a jaw that was unable to close straight, giving him slightly lopsided features. His whole appearance was one of a successful, self-confident merchant. As if to confirm this, he was accompanied by two beautiful girls who wore expensive dresses and a lot of jewelry. They were several years younger than Christiana, Ediard decided with a little burst of sympathy for them. Then he met the man's gaze. It was a scrutiny every bit as intense as the one the Pythia had given him all those months ago. Ediard instinctively knew there was an enmity between them, and returned the stare levelly, even though he didn't know why.
"Who is that?" he asked quietly.
"That," Master Solorin said with extreme distaste, "is Captain Ival."
"Has he some kind of ship?" Ediard asked. He was mildly put out by the way the others groaned disparagingly.
"No," Che said. "He doesn't own a ship, though he makes out he used to captain a merchantman. Ival is the owner of the House of Blue Petals."
Ediard had heard of that establishment. A bordello in the Myco district, next to Macathran's port. Captain Ronark had come forward to stand at Ediard's shoulder.
"If the gangs in this city can be said to have a leader," Ronark said, "it is Ival.
He at least likes to style himself the master of our criminal fraternity. It was probably him who sent Armanel back to ambush you."
"Ah,"
Ediard said. He smiled politely and inclined his head towards the villain. Ival returned the gesture, tipping his gold-topped cane in Ediard's direction. Master Cherix came up behind him and murmured something in his ear. Ival smiled tightly and came over to the constables.
"My congratulations on an exemplary case," he said.
His voice was rough, and Ediard suspected the injury that left his jaw askew had caused some deeper damage.
"Thank you," Ediard said with a heavy dose of irony.
"The city is so much better off without such people," Ival continued. "They are cheap vermin. They bring nothing to our lives. You, though, you are an exceptional man, Constable Ediard."
"I do my best."
Ediard was uncomfortably aware of the way Maxen and one of Captain Ival's girls were smirking at each other. He wanted to smack his friend hard.
"As do we all," Ival said. "Everyone in their own small way contributes to the flow of life of this fine city. In this respect, I extend an invitation to you and your friends to enjoy the hospitality of my house."
Ediard was very aware of everyone waiting for his response. "So this is what Finnitan was warning me about. I've shown the gangs that not all constables are pushovers, that their usual violence doesn't work against me, so they want to see how far I'm going to take this. Politics." He allowed an old, deeply personal image to leak from his mind, the smouldering ruins of Ashwell, with corpses protruding from the ruins.
"I haven't been down to your district of the city yet," Ediard said, "but I'm planning on visiting soon."
Ival's pudgy lips pressed together in a big display of disappointment. He shrugged elaborately.
"I look forward to meeting you there, young man."
He turned and walked away, a girl clinging possessively to each arm. Only then did Ediard notice the looks the others were giving him.
"What?"
Captain Ronark smiled.
"Good man, Ediard. I knew you wouldn't betray yourself."
Che gave him an admiring grin and walked out with the captain.
"Where was that place?"
Boyd asked with trepidation.
The village I grew up in, Ediard told him. Lady, just seeing it frightened me.
I wanted some emphasis. I wanted to make sure Ivar understood.
Oh, I think he got it. You don't have to worry on that score.
Shame, though, Maxen said wistfully. Did you see the blonde one?
You peasant, Cancine hissed at him.
Hey, I can make noble, painful sacrifices too, you know. You have to have standards to be a part of the Water Walker squad.
Don't call me that, Ediard said wearily. Too late, Boyd said. Far too late.
It was mid-afternoon when they got back to the G-Van's constable station. They claimed their usual table in the hall, and the G-Monkeys brought over plates of sandwiches and mugs of tea. Of late, the station food had improved. Local shopkeepers were keen to supply the constables with their better products at reasonable prices, grateful for the noticeable reduction in gang activity in the district. Ediard appreciated the gesture, but it made him very aware of the expectations settling on his shoulders. And now I've seen the real enemy. Arminel might be gone, but Ivar can send a dozen more just like him onto the streets. 100. After the elation of the trial, it was a sobering thought. He hadn't really changed anything, just made himself famous. And ultimately, what use is that to people?
Results or what? Boyd said as he picked up one of the sandwiches. A malted roll containing ham and cheese with a strong tomato chutney. He bit in contentedly.
All the other constables in the station were making a point of coming over to congratulate them on the verdict. Ediard was finally getting embarrassed by the admiration.
Yes, a result all right, Cancine said, picking through the rest of the sandwiches. But it's only one result.
Trust you to pour on the ice water, Maxen said.
She's right, Ediard said. We're going to have to do a lot more than this before the gangs even start getting worried.
Not so. Ivar is worried enough about the Water Walker to crawl out from under his rock and get a first-hand look, Boyd said.
Will you please stop calling me that?
I thought Arminel would get 30 to 40 years at least, Maxen said, but for the rest of his life.
He's only what? 30? That's at least 150 years in Trampello. It's not exactly a pavilion on the Uguru. 150 years? Owen must really want to be re-elected.
I'm not sorry for him, Ediard said. He was going to kill me.
Because Ivar told him to, Cancine said.
You think so?
No way could he put together an ambush like that without a lot of help. He'd need permission. Ivar must have agreed.
Oh, lady, Maxen muttered in alarm. Look out!
Ediard's farsight showed him Captain Ronark leading Chief Constable Walsfall into the hall. Everyone fell silent. Benches were scraped across the floor as the constables stood up. Even the G-chimps stopped moving. Chief Constable Walsfall walked directly over to Ediard's table. He was in his full dress uniform, an immaculate black tunic with gold buttons and scarlet epaulets with a diamond stud. Ediard had been introduced briefly the day after he arrested Arminel. He'd actually been quite impressed with the Chief Constable. The man was in his second century, and the fact he'd fought his way to the top of the constables was evident in his manner. Walsfall was a straight-talking man. Secure, his position was achieved through the support of the stations. Walsfall saluted smartly. Ediard hurriedly returned the salute.
An excellent day, Constable, Walsfall said in his clipped, aristocratic accent. You have done this station proud.
Thank you, sir.
Walsfall took a pair of epaulets from his pocket. They had a single silver star on them.
As a consequence of your bravery and actions in Birmingham Pool, I would like to offer you promotion to corporal.
It might have been Ediard's imagination, but he was sure the word offer was stressed. But he was so relieved that this was the test Finnerton had spoken of, rather than Ivar's crude attempt at bribery, he simply said,
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I'd be honored to accept.
Captain Ronark led the applause as the chief constable attached the epaulets to Ediard's shoulders. Of course, Finnerton wasn't talking about Ivar, Ediard chided himself. The Grand Council want to know if I'm going to support their authority.
Lady,
Do they think I might be a challenge to them? Wolfsoul finished and saluted again.
Corporal Waterwalker, Maxon said, holding up his beer and laughing.
Ediard had now completely surrendered to the ribbing he was getting. They'd all wound up in the Olivian's Eagle for a few celebratory drinks, claiming a small booth in the upstairs bar where they were relatively undisturbed.
I wonder which squads will be under your command, Cansine mused. Corporals are normally in charge of three.
Please don't team us up with Drowell's lot, Boyd said. They're worthless crap artists, and everyone knows. Vilby is on the take.
I didn't know that, said Ediard.
What, with all your psychic superpowers? Maxon asked.
Ediard showed him the hand gesture Oberon always used to employ, only to find it summoned up a mournful nostalgia that unexpectedly made his eyes water.
Oberon, he would be 23 now.
You're going to have to think about this, Ediard, Cansine said. Seriously, they're all going to watch what you do with the promotion. It's an opportunity to put together a team of your own constables, people you know you can rely on.
Yeah, yeah. Ediard didn't really want to think of all the responsibility which came with his new position.
Unfortunately, his problem was that he couldn't stop worrying about what he should do next. Gangs and constables would both want to see what he was capable of, if he was just some strong lad from the countryside, happy with the attention of all the city girls, or someone who would stand up for the law and make a difference. The Orchard Palace probably want to know as well.
I suppose I'll have to keep you locked, he said with a grand show of reluctance.
It was Boyd's turn for the hand gesture.
Even Dinley,
Maxon said in such a soft voice only Ediard heard him.
Yes, Ediard said with a tiny, directed long talk. Even Dinley.
Maxon scowled into his beer glass.
And what are you going to do with this team of yours? Cansine asked earnestly. It's only 15 people, after all.
2 months ago it was just the five of us, Ediard said calmly. We can shape ourselves into something useful, I'm sure. That's if Ronark will allow us. There are procedures, after all.
Not to start with, Boyd said, uncharacteristically serious. You've got some momentum behind you, Water Walker, and a great deal of goodwill. This is your chance to make something of it.
Dear lady, give him a beer and listen to the politicians sprout forth, Ediard groaned.
I know Macathran, Boyd insisted. There's a chance here for you.
He put his arms around Cansine and Maxen, and we three native guides are going to make sure you don't blow that chance.
You three? Ediard rolled his eyes. Great. How can we fail?
We stick together, Maxon said. Always have, always will, no matter what.
No matter what. They all drank to that.
Boyd pushed his empty glass across the table. And with your new corporal's pay, I believe you can afford the next round.
Sorry, Ediard said, standing up and buttoning his tunic. I have an appointment at the Alrado Theatre, and it's a long walk to the Zelda district.
An appointment? Maxon inquired keenly.
Someone from the Guild of Clerks. They're helping me with taxes.
He left to the sounds of their derisive laughter. Just as he started down the awkward curving stairs, he heard Cansine exclaim,
No! I bought the last round!
It was cold on the streets outside Olivian's Eagle. Frost was clinging to the city's pavements, and there were flakes of snow drifting down past the bright orange lights shining out of the buildings. People wrapped in thick coats wove past Ediard as he made his way along Albi Lane towards Flight Canal. He'd thrown out a seclusion haze to ward off curious farsight, as did all Macathran citizens going about business they regarded as private. The effect was like a mild version of concealment. Ediard was approaching the Iron Bridge over to the Haxpen district, when his farsight swept over a figure for the third time. They'd been trailing him for some time, ignoring his obvious wish to be left alone. He focused on them to find it was
Salrana, he exclaimed.
She scurried forwards, thoughts radiant with impish delight. Almost as tall as him now, he acknowledged. Her full-length dark grey poncho coat flapped as she moved, a big hood pulled well forwards.
"You're so slow," she admonished, giggling. "I've been following you ever since you left the tavern. If I was an assassin, you'd be dead by now."
She pushed her hood back, allowing her auburn hair to flow free, and kissed him breathlessly.
"You know, I hardly recognized you with your hair so long. The city fashion suits you."
Ediard grinned back, very aware that she was still pressed up against him. He studied her face with its sharp cheeks and lovely dark brown eyes that were wide and teasing. She was gorgeous now, and because of that he kept trying to avoid her. They still long-talked every day, but he kept using the trial as an excuse for not actually meeting up. Just being with her on a cold, gloomy street made him embarrassed about all the girls he'd tumbled these last few weeks, so spending a pleasant afternoon together with her would be torture.
"Why?" he asked himself. "She's beautiful and she wants me, and I'd adore having her in my bed and my life. We really would be the perfect couple. The only other who even comes close is Cancine." His hesitation was born out of some stupid notion of duty. At least that was always the excuse he gave himself. He really did feel protective towards her, and that was hardly necessary anymore. It wasn't as if they were alone against the world these days. Maybe he was just afraid to change the way things were. There had been so many upheavals. She was his constant in a very unsteady life. And how she'd hate being told that. She was young and vivacious and wanted some fun. She deserved happiness. And they would be happy together.
"Gosh, seeing me really does cheer you up, doesn't it?" she mocked.
"Sorry," he smiled, pushing his emotions down below any possible farsight perception. "It's fantastic to see you, but that just reminds me what I've got to do tonight."
"Really?"
she asked brightly. Her arm tucked through his, and they started to walk over the iron bridge.
"You poor thing. It must be truly terrible having to entertain Christiana and Ranelagh in your bed."
Ediard stopped in shock.
"How on Querentia did you know that?"
She giggled again, delighted to have flustered him.
"Oh, Ediard, the whole city knows who snagged the water walker tonight. Christiana has been bragging in half the saloons in town today, and you know what this city is for gossip."
"Yes," he said brokenly. Then, because he couldn't help it, he asked, "Are people really talking about my love life?"
"Talking, singing, writing books on it. I think they're planning a play for the ox roast on Golden Park this new year."
"Shut up." She pressed him against the railing and kissed him again. Her skin was warm, soft, and silky. Her scent strong.
"Will the second act be us? And the third and the fourth?"
Ediard almost pushed her away. Instead, with a massive effort of will, he smiled back ruefully and turned round to lean on the rail. Then he put his arm around her. Her mind's flash of delighted surprise at the gesture was intoxicating.
"Have I been really stupid?" he asked.
"Only rejecting me. The rest of it, you're just like any grand family son on his 15th birthday. You've got the run of the city, Ediard. The difference between you and them is that you earned it. People are fascinated to learn what's going to happen next, if Armanel was just a fluke, or you're truly going to be the Water Walker."
He sighed. "I hate that name."
"I hope, Ediard, I hope you live up to it. Did you know church attendance has gone up since Birmingham Pool? You displayed duty and honor that day as well as courage. Their trait so sorely lacking in this city. It showed people what was absent from their own lives. It was a wonderful thing, Ediard."
He stared down into the dark water with its surface crust of slush. There were ripples near the far bank where fill rats were nesting. A couple of gondoliers were edging their way towards them along from High Pool on the Grand Major Canal, their lamps glinting on their prows, their gondoliers harmonizing a gentle melody.
"I don't know what to do next," he confessed. "Actually, that's not true. I know what I should do. But if I go there, if I use my talent to take on the gangs, then there'll be no turning back. Right now, I can do nothing, and all the fuss will die down. But..."
She hugged him back. It was a gesture more intimate than any of her flirting had ever kindled.
"You can't do that," she whispered. You know you can't.
Yeah, I know that. Thank you.
I'm just passing on the lady's teachings, Edyard. That's what I've given my life to.
You're such a good person, Sulrana.
She leaned in playfully. I don't want to be.
Not with you.
And those family girls, they say you're a good lover.
Edyard shivered with mortification.
All Macathran is discussing that. Yet, at the same time, you don't want to believe everything you hear.
Don't I?
She said archly. Well, okay, I admit that bit's true.
Oh, listen to you!
She thumped him on the shoulder, then immediately pulled him in closer and kissed him again. It was like that time back in the bottom of the well. He knew he shouldn't, but actually there wasn't any real reason why not. For once, let the heart rule, not the mind. A couple walked past them, Farsight gently examining the young couple, embracing with growing ardor. Heads turned.
It is him,
the woman whispered,
the water walker.
And that's a lady's novice.
A long talk voice was directed at a number of acquaintances.
You'll never guess.
Edyard and Sulrana broke apart, smirking like scolded apprentices. They straightened their clothes and moved down the slope of the bridge to the Hackspen side.
I'm going to get a reputation worse than Dybal, Edyard decided.
Good camouflage. The gangs will underestimate you if they think you're just a wicked womanizer.
Yeah, he laughed. 'Tis a terrible price.
Come on, I'll walk you back to Millicull House. It's sort of on my route.
No, it isn't.
Actually, it is. I'm going to try and achieve something.
You and the lady are right. It would be wrong not to try.
And that's tonight.
Yes, it's perfect. Nobody will expect me to do any kind of constable work tonight.
I certainly didn't.
I know. We really need to talk.
We've talked for 3 years, Edyard.
Yeah.
And he was hugely tempted, as always. Perhaps dealing with Ivar could wait one day.
Actually, I'm not being fair,
Sulrana said.
Oh?
My house mother told me yesterday. I'm being assigned to the ladies' hospital in Ufford for the winter.
Where's that?
Capital town of Tralsha province, that south of the Uguru.
What? No.
Yeah, nursing is all part of our training.
But there are hospitals in Macathran.
The church doesn't work that way. It wants us to learn of life outside the crystal wall.
You know more of life outside than any city mother does, or ever will, he said with petulance.
And telling them that would not be helpful.
I could ask Master Finnerton if he could speak to your mother.
Sulrana chuckled softly.
Really? That ought to do it. A friend of his wants a novice as a mistress, so could you please change her traditional training schedule to make that possible?
Ah, no, put like that, I suppose not.
You suppose right.
But you wouldn't be my mistress.
Wouldn't I?
No.
He shook his head firmly.
No. Never. We would be equals. True lovers.
Oh, Edyard.
A tear emerged from her eye as she looked up at him.
Say that again.
Promise me. Promise we'll be lovers when I get back.
Edyard took both her hands in his own. As the lady is my witness.
I promise.